Welcome back, everyone. Welcome to Wake Up with Jenny and Friends. Thank you so much for joining me again this week. I hope you had an amazing week. A big shout out to our sponsor this week. I'm giving zero fucks. Not me personally. Well, sometimes maybe, but I'm giving zero fucks. AJ over at Given Zero. Go check them out. www.givenzero.com. Amazing t-shirts, amazing hats. They've got some hoodies, zip-up hoodies. We've done a few giveaways, more to come. Go check them out. A big shout out and a big thank you to I'm Giving Zero Fucks over on Instagram. Make sure you follow them and check them out on their website at www.givenzero.com. I am excited for this show and I am joined by my friend Hector. Hector, how are you?
Wonderful. How are yourself?
I am great. Thank you very much. I had a crazy week and I know you did too. And yes. You had some fun things happening this week and I want to talk to you about them because you went to a few concerts.
I did actually. I have this amphitheater down the road from where I live. So it's kind of like, a tradition.
It's like a tradition.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
nice.
Absolutely.
And so what was the concert you just went to? Because that sounded really good.
Rod Stewart and Cheap Trick.
Oh, how was
that? Yeah, I know. It took me back, way back.
Amazing, amazing. Is he still as good in concert as he once was? Is he still like, it's epic to see him?
Oh, absolutely. Now, I call him Parking Lot concerts. I don't get to see him. I got to hear the music.
Okay.
So it was wonderful. Yeah.
But the audio was good. It's amazing.
Oh, the audio was awesome. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Do you prefer live music over recorded music, like listening to it on the radio or the tapes or tapes?
Oh, I love live music.
Did I just date myself? A tape. Who has a tape?
Right. Some of your younger audience are like, huh? What's a tape?
What?
Yeah.
Don't get me started on 8-tracks.
Oh man, I still remember 8-tracks.
You remember those? Holy
yeah, I do remember those, yes.
Well, and I asked that because when I started going to concerts when I was young, I started going to it used to be called Molson Amphitheater. And I went to a couple before that too, but that was really our summer tradition. We would go to concerts every summer at Molson Amphitheater. But the first concert I went to, I was kind of taken aback because I thought, well, this doesn't sound like the album, the CD, the record, the whatever. And for at the beginning, I was like, oh, I don't know if I like this, but it grows on you and you realize that like the live music for me, I love it.
Oh, I love live music. To me, it's one of my favorite pastimes. If I can find a live recording of them,
yeah,
doing. I've listened to it many times. You also identify the good bands and the bands, Motley Crue is one of the greatest bands of all time, but that was one of the worst shows I've ever seen in my life. I mean, the guys. So, you get to see that also, and then you get guys like George Strait that just sing and you're like, it's worth it.
Love
George Strait. Worth it. Yeah.
Love George Strait. That's so funny that you said that because I went to, most of the, I'd say probably all, but maybe one or two concerts that I've been to have been fabulous. The one concert I was most disappointed in was Blue Rodeo.
Blue Rodeo, wow. Yeah.
They are a fabulous band. I really like them. They're a fabulous band, Canadian band, great music. Love their music, love their songs, listen to them frequently on the radio. I'm sure I have a CD or two somewhere. Went to see them in concert. The most sorry for whoever is a huge fan of Blue Rodeo, the most boring concert I had ever been to. Literally everyone was sitting down in their seat. Like no one, usually you get people get up and dance and they're a part of it. They're interactive. It was so boring. It was so boring. We actually considered leaving early.
Yeah, one of the best shows I've ever seen was a band called A Bowling for Soup. It's have you ever seen the TV show Phineas and Ferb? They do the theme song. They have a song called High. It's a really cool band. It's it's kind of a 90s band. And for some reason or another, only about 20 of us were there. But they still played the show like nothing. They interacted with the crowd. It was really awesome. That's still one of my favorite shows ever, you know, because I'm like, wow, I'm actually, you know, high-fiving the guitarist, you know.
Oh, wow. So. Yeah, well, I guess with the, yeah, you had an opportunity.
Yeah, 20 of us only. Yeah, so, yeah, it's sure. A beauty spot, yeah.
That's yeah. Amazing. What was your favorite concert to date so far? I know you've been to a lot of them. You're a big
man. Yeah, I do a lot. Yeah. When it comes just to music, enjoying music, Chicago is always the top.
Oh, Chicago. And you did you just Chicago. Recently see them?
I did, actually. Yeah. I did. I've seen Chicago about 20 times. No, I'll be excited. Really about 7-8 times in my lifetime. Funny story about Chicago. So I went with, you know, to see them. And the opening band, I can't remember who it was, but it was the guy looked like he needed to like retire or.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was bad. It's funny because now, you know, we're getting to the age where people that like Chicago have to wear earplugs and all that. And it's funny to watch them. I used to do this thing with hostesses at the restaurant, right? It's like, you know, if Chicago came on the radio, I go out to them and say, Lee, if you tell me who's playing, I'm going to buy you lunch.
Oh.
And so, you know,
a little wartime trivia. Kids,
yeah. Of course, yeah. Most of them didn't know who the hell Chicago was because most hostesses don't. Stop doing that when one of them told me, like, oh, wait, I know this one. My great grandma listens to this band.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, you little shit. You're lucky enough, fired right now. Yeah. Yeah, but definitely Chicago. George Strait did a great show. Cody Johnson's amazing.
I know you really love him. Yeah, his music.
I love Cody Johnson. I mean, he's actually my neighbor. He's down the road from me. Yeah. The first concert I ever went to, and his energy was amazing, was John Cougar. I think he was called John Mellencamp.
Oh, my gosh, John Cougar Mellencamp. Whatever his name was. Yeah. Yes,
I loved him. He was like, he tripped. And back then, when the summit before it became a Lakewood Church, he tripped, broke either his arm or nose, something. He was bleeding and got up and still was running around and just being full of energy.
He was probably high on coke, too.
Of course, yeah, everybody was back then, you know? Yeah.
That's an assumption. It's not fact. Just point out.
Yeah. Back then, who was it, right?
Supermodel? He's married to a supermodel or something.
I think so. Yeah.
I think some blonde girl. Anyways. Yeah. Yeah. He's great. Or no, Kim Basinger. Isn't he with Kim Basinger now? Yes. That's
I don't know, actually. Yes. I know. I heard on the radio that he's coming out with a new album. It's like, wow, he's still alive. All right. Cool.
Nice. Nice.
Some of the bands exciting. I went to see when I was younger, like, oh, there goes another one. Yeah.
Yeah. That's exciting. Yeah. I've seen a lot of concerts, not so much in the last couple of years, but the boys just went to go see Eric Church.
Oh, I like Church. I like Church. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not too familiar with his music, but apparently he's really good. So
yeah. Yeah. I think so. I think he's good. Yeah.
Yeah. But I love that. And I would love to see, Garth Brooks in concert.
He's gonna be here in a month, actually.
Don't toy with my emotions.
Hey, you know what? It's right here, man. You know.
Are you serious? He's gonna be there in a month.
He's doing his so he's doing some stadium tour, and either his last performance in Houston or his last performance ever. I couldn't understand what the radio was saying.
Double whammy, emotional.
Yeah. So apparently the tour started in Houston at the Livestock Show and Rodeo, and then he's going to end it at August the 4th, probably. Don't quote me, but it's the first weekend of August. August 6th, yes.
Oh, my gosh. Shut the front door. I wonder if we could still get tickets.
Oh, they're easy to get still here, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Hey, you know, put your stuff on a plane. My treat. I don't like Garth Brooks that much.
Dragging you to a concert.
Well, hold on. I've been to some concerts. I was like, too far for tea. Yeah, the other day I was watching Justin, one of the TikToks Justin was doing, and he was like, Garth Brooks or George Strait? I'm like, Justin, bro, you lost me. You know, that even a question? Now, my favorite country song is by Garth Brooks. So, there's still some, you know.
What's your favorite song?
But Much Too Young.
Favorite
Garth Brooks song. Wow. I was going to call him George Strait. Garth Brooks song.
I'm a big fan of Shameless. Shameless.
Shameless. That's a good one. I forgot about that one. Yeah.
Shameless. That's a really good song. And that Summer. Woo.
Oh, That Summer.
That's a good one too.
Samantha. What is the Samantha song? Which was called Colin Baton Rouge, yeah.
Oh, Baton Rouge, yes.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he still does music. I'm not a fan of him, but his music's pretty decent. Yeah.
Yeah, love it, love it. Well, the whole idea for this show, and thank you for joining me and being so patient with me, because my life and my time has been a little crazy lately, and then my parents came and we had a great time, but just starting
that's the most important part right there.
Just starting to get back into the swing of things, and I had a couple of little sinus infections downtime, so just getting back into the swing of things. So we tried to do the show a couple of times, but thank you so much for being so patient and agreeing to do the show. And what we thought we would do is we're going to take turns. I'm going to go today and you're going to go next time on another episode.
Right.
A couple months ago, I was supposed to go to what do you call it? A sitting? It's not a concert. It's the last podcast on the left was supposed to come to Toronto.
Okay. I love their stuff, by the way. It's hilarious.
Isn't it great? Isn't it great?
Yeah, they had me hooked. They did a series on Mormonism. And I mean, they had me rolling the whole time. You know, it's hilarious. Like, I never heard it put this way. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. So the boys turned me on to one of the guys from Widowmaker turned me on to it. And I'm obsessed. I listen to it all the time. It's a great podcast. So if you don't listen to it.
Can I interrupt you for something? Yeah. So I'm glad you mentioned Widowmaker because I want to give him a shout out, right?
Okay,
So let me tell you what an experience I have. I'm not going to mention names or anything because, you know, it involves. Yeah. So I was trying to send this package to Canada, right?
Uh-huh.
To Toronto, especially, right? And I was having the issue with the post, right? And it came down to it. I'm learning Canadian. I call it post, see?
Eh?
All right. I'm getting there, yeah. So I was trying to get this package in, right? And the company I was dealing with is from Austin, Texas, a very famous jewelry maker here in Austin.
Uh-huh.
And anyway, they sent it to the wrong address. They sent it to me instead of to Toronto. And I called the company like, what are you guys doing? You know, and so long story short, apparently they can't send stuff to Canada. So it's like, let me get this straight. If you send it to me, I can send it, but you can't send it. So when I ordered from Widowmaker, they sent straight out, never had any issues with them. I was like, see, the Canadians can do it, but the Texan can't.
Right.
You know, but of course they're from Austin, so it makes sense, you know.
Right.
So I was making fun of Austin. I'm sorry. But yeah, I wanted to say, like, man, look, you know, I wanted to give a shout out because of that. It's like, man, look at these guys. They take care of business over there.
And they really do. They are some of the best guys I know. They have a phenomenal company, amazing work ethic, good guys, funny as fuck.
Oh, absolutely.
Can't go wrong. They make amazing stuff, amazing apparel, Widowmaker Supply on Instagram. They also have a podcast, the Widowmaker Supply podcast. No, the Widowmaker podcast. I've never been disappointed with an episode.
I have no meter. I love their deals. Like, what is it? 10% honey, 10% fishing, 90% bullshit.
90% bullshit. Yeah.
I was talking to my buddy Dave in San Antonio the other day about it. He's like, doesn't make sense. Like, yeah, it does. But it, you know, exchange rate from the Canadian dollar to the American dollar. You know, that's the extra 10% there, you know? But yeah.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Yeah, they're amazing guys, and they've got a great business, and the quality of their apparel is outstanding.
Absolutely.
Their hoodies are phenomenal. I love their stuff. And my dad, I got a hat for my mom and my dad.
Oh,
and,
awesome.
They love them. And my dad loves the hat so much. You know that when you get a hat and it has the cardboard thing in the insert in the front to just keep the shape?
Of course.
He wears it with the cardboard insert because he doesn't want to lose the shape of the hat.
That's awesome.
I know. It's like he really loves the hat. So I love the boys for that. And it made my dad happy, which is amazing.
That's the most important part right there. Yeah. Nothing else matters after that.
Widowmakersupply.com. Get your stuff. And great guys. So anyway, so back to the idea for this show, the concept for this show. We were supposed to go see Last Podcast on the Left a couple months ago. Long story short, they didn't end up coming. So you and I both enjoy, amongst others, you and I both have an affinity for the murdery bits, as I call them.
Absolutely, yes.
Murdery bits.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I'm still disappointed I'm not allowed to do a live one. You know, I was, but just throwing out there.
I don't know what that means, but I'm gonna.
You know, when you first told me about this, like, ooh, we get to do a live murder.
No, for legal reasons, that was a joke.
I know, it was totally a joke.
No weapons here.
No.
So we thought we would do I'll call it a discount version of last podcast on the left. And while I was looking up, so we each chose a murderer?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay. Each chose a person, an unsavory individual.
Yes.
And as I was doing a little bit of research for this episode, I had a greater appreciation for the work and dedication and time it takes for them to do their show and their episodes, because
absolutely.
I was going through some stuff and I'm like, holy shit, it must take them a month to prepare for one episode. It is like, so I am by no means trying to emulate them, copy them, be up to par with them, be on the same level of them. In any way, shape, or form, a very much discounted version of them, but I thought it would be a fun idea if we gave it a go and gave it a try.
Absolutely. Sounds great. Yeah, those guys, I mean, their research they do is amazing. Some of the stuff, even the Mormonism ones, like I thought I knew everything. Like, really? I didn't even knew that. Huh. So I'd have to go Google it. Like, wow, these guys are really good about this stuff. So, yeah.
And their banter and their joking around, they're all friends too, which I think is adds to it. It really enriches the conversation in the podcast. Same with, not to give another shout out, but same with the Widowmaker boys. They're all, they have been friends for a long, long time. So that there's that richness there, with the inside jokes and the, you know, so it just adds to it. But anyways, here we go. For my unsavory person, I chose Waco, Texas, David Koresh.
Oh, one of my favorite people in history.
Now, do you remember? Oh no, you probably didn't see these commercials because I think it was solely Canadian. Before we get too far into this episode, I will say trigger warning: if death and murdery stuff, and there may be minors, murder of minors involved. The trigger warning: if this is a thing for you, stop now. Thanks for showing up. See you next episode. If you can handle a little bit of squeamishness, feel free to stay. We have a company here called, I believe it was a President's Choice. I think it's like with the Loblaws company now, but they used to do commercials for certain products, specialty products, like house brand products that they would put out every month at the grocery store, and it would be memories of Tokyo, memories of Japan, or memories of New York, and it would be like a cheesesteak, or it would be like a sauce for a stir fry or something like that. And they would do these commercials. And so during this time of the Waco thing, this is not funny. It's not nice, but it's funny. There was this meme going around. Well, a meme for that time, a joke going around at that time. There was a barbecue sauce and it was called Memories of Waco. Do you remember?
I don't remember that, but that's hilarious, actually.
I mean, that's a great way to open the show. So Waco, Texas, for anybody who doesn't know, is in the U.S. And it's situated along the Brazos River. It's about halfway between, and yes, I'm reading from my notes, so don't at me. Watching this. Halfway between Dallas and Austin, Texas. So you know it's good. Yes.
Absolutely, yes.
And did you know where Waco got its name from?
I did not, actually.
Yeah, it was the funniest story. A young boy had lost his dog and he was out on the streets and he was, "Wake up, wake." That's not true at all. No, it was the,
okay. I was like, what? Like, I was about to call my buddies and wake up. Like, don't try to tell you about your Steve. Because y'all were crazy.
Originally occupied by the Wichita Indian tribe known as Waco. So that's how that name got adopted there. So there's a little history on Waco, Texas, where it is. Enter in David Koresh.
Oh, of course.
Now, I used highly reliable sources, namely Wikipedia, for a lot of this.
Of course, yeah.
So you might want to take notes, just saying. came from quite a dysfunctional background, Mr. Koresh did.
Yes. Born right here in Houston, Texas.
Well, that's very true. Born Vernon Wayne Howell, actually.
Doesn't that sound like a serial killer name?
It's if I ever heard one, yes. I mean, if you're if your aspirations are to be a murderer, Vernon is a great start.
And Wayne's like, you know.
Wayne.
Yeah. That just automatically, as soon as I read it, it's like, somebody's going to be in the electric chair in Texas, fixing to get the needle tomorrow or something.
David Koresh was born Vernon Wayne Howell on August 17th, 1959, in, as you say, Houston, Texas, to, check this out, a 14-year-old single mother named Bonnie Sue Clark. Gotta love the Bonnies. My aunt was a Bonnie, and she was was lovely. She could swear like a trucker, but she was the sweetest thing ever. And a father, Bobby Wayne Howell. So that's, you know, carry on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Before he was born, his father met yet another teenage girl. Daddy likes them young.
he likes them young, yeah.
And he abandoned Bonnie Sue and she began staying with a violent alcoholic, because that's the way to go if you want to.
Of course, yeah.
Really want to go places in life. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, because there's a few, there's the happy alcoholics, there's the fun alcoholics, there's, you know, the alcoholics that just fall asleep and then you got lots of free time on your hands, you do whatever you want, right. You don't need to bother them. And then there's the violent ones, and you definitely want to pick the violent ones if you're looking to have an adventurous life, right?
Yeah, of course, have a fun life, you know? Yeah.
Absolutely. In 1963, Koresh's mother left with her boyfriend and placed her 4-year-old son in the care of his maternal grandmother, Earlene Clark. Gotta love the Grahams, right?
Yeah, I go Grahams.
All for the Grahams. Yeah. Gotta do it for the Grahams. His mother returned when he was 7, because that's, you know, that's the right time to return. I mean, if you're gonna abandon your child and leave,
of course,
yeah, leave when all, perfect age, you know, right? You don't want to be doing diapers. You don't.
Yeah,
you know,
of course not. No.
Who wants to feed? They wait till they can wipe their own ass and feed themselves.
Except they can cook for themselves at 7. All that. Yeah. They can wipe their own ass.
Yeah. Yeah, they should be able to drive by then. Like,
of course,
yeah. You know, it's 7 is a great age. 7's a great age. after she returned, she married a carpenter named Roy Halderman. They had a son together, and they named him, here's another winner, Roger.
Oh, Roger. Yeah, man.
Yeah. Incidentally, Roger became the owner and founder of Rogers Center and Rogers Television.
Really?
No, that's not.
Okay, I was going to say, what?
I was trying to give him a big ops, but no.
I'm like, so man, I got to do some more research here. Shit.
There's always one sibling that does better than the other.
Of course, yeah.
Incidentally, Koresh did not meet his father until he was 17. Convenient. Yeah. I mean, you want to roll up on a dad and have a smoke, right?
Of course, yeah.
Koresh described his childhood as lonely, which probably living with Grahams. I mean, what are you going to do on the weekends? Yeah. Shuffleboard and a little scone making?
No, he was also very strange at school because he was dyslexic, and back then they were the odd kids.
He was, yes. Due to his poor study skills and dyslexia, he was put in a special education class and nicknamed Vernie by his fellow students.
That's like one heck of a name. I mean, I would go with Vernie.
Yeah. Vernon's bad enough. You want to shorten that to Vernie? I mean, try your luck. Yeah. He dropped out of high school in his junior year. Can you blame him?
No, I don't.
Can you blame him?
We're having some coffee bits again?
A little leftover of the old sinus infection. When he was 19 years old, Koresh had an illegal sexual relationship, following the footsteps of old dear dad, with a 15-year-old girl who became pregnant. Of course, no one knew how that happened back then. You know, you could get pregnant by kissing. Right. Yes. Yeah.
No, I have to ask.
Yeah.
Illegal?
Well, illegal because she was underage.
So, funny story, I found this out.
Oh.
Back then, she was legal. Back then, 14 was consent.
Ooh, in Texas. What?
That changed. And I did not know this because I always thought I was 17. That didn't change until Mr. Jeff's of the Mulberry, San Marcos.
Right.
San Angel, I'm sorry, not San Marcos. I'm wrong, San Marcos. San Angel. I said, that's where the law changed. So, yeah.
Wow.
We'll find out later on why CPS couldn't do anything to Mr. Koresh because of that.
Interessante. Well, speaking of change, let's take one tiny little step back and talk about his name change. Born Vernon Howell, changed his name to Koresh. So what happened was he filed a petition in California State on May 15th, 1990 to legally change his name for what he decided to be publicity and business purposes, to David Koresh. On August 28th, 1990, the petition was granted, and Koresh, a little tidbit here, is the biblical name of the Cyrus the Great, a Persian king who was named a Messiah for freeing the Jews during the Babylonian captivity. His first name, David, symbolized a lineage directly to the biblical king, King David.
One of my favorite people in the Bible.
Yes, from whom the new Messiah would descend. By taking the name of David Koresh, he was then prophesying himself to be the spiritual descendant of King David, which we know is false. Right. How do we know this? Number one, he doesn't look like a David.
Yes,
he doesn't.
He's not a bad looking guy, you know, but yeah.
Yeah, this is the thing. Some of these like murdery, unsavory people, this is how they get there. They pull people in, right? Another Bundy. One of my faves. Well, faves, yeah. you know, Ted Bundy, also a very decent looking guy. Number one, he doesn't look like a David. Number two, nowhere in the Bible did it ever say anything about a future Vernon changing his name to David Koresh. So we're just not buying it, Vernon. Right. Okay? We're just not buying it. One tiny little bit. Back to his little illegal relationship with this 15-year-old girl who became pregnant. He then claimed to have become a born-again Christian in the Southern Baptist Church and soon joined his mother's denomination, the Seventh-day Adventist Church. There, Koresh became infatuated with a pastor's daughter, and while praying for guidance, he opened his eyes and allegedly found the Bible open to Isaiah 34:16, stating that none should want for her mate. Convinced that this was a sign from God, Koresh approached the pastor and told him that God wanted him to save his daughter to be his wife. Because that's not creepy.
You know, I'm shocked that you guys thought back then, you know, be honest with you. But, you know.
Red flag.
Right, that's number one right there. Like, man, yeah.
He wanted to take more than the host.
Yeah, when I was reading that part, I was like, yeah, somebody tell me that about press. Yeah, we're going to have some issues.
Exactly. Well, the pastor also found this creepy because he threw him out.
Good.
No, but yeah, probably was a trigger back to high school days. Nobody wants me.
Yeah.
He threw him out. And when he continued to persist with this pursuit of the pastor's daughter, he was expelled from the congregation. In 1981, Koresh moved to Waco, Texas, where he joined the Branch Davidians, not to be confused with the original Davidian Seventh-day Adventist Church, which was founded by Benjamin Rodin, who died in 1978, who we will get to in a second.
Oh, absolutely.
Who originated the Branch Group in 1955 with new teachings that were not connected with the original Davidians. Koresh played guitar and sang in the church for that service at Mount Carmel Center and the sect's headquarters outside of Waco. What are your thoughts so far?
You know, he's a fascinating guy. I mean, you know, he wanted to be a rock star. Apparently, he didn't make it.
Yeah.
He was a local celebrity in Waco as far as that. I think I read somewhere that even Governor Richards said he was just kind of like, yeah, you know, the Davidians not going to bother you or anything like that. So,
yeah,
definitely interesting background, of course, interesting background. And I mean, this guy memorized the Bible, which is amazing, you know, that he did that. But yeah.
Well, you got a lot of time on your hands when you have no friends.
Exactly, right? Yeah, no friends. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no friends. All you do is play guitar and get kicked out pretty much everywhere you go.
So, yeah.
Yeah. not much to do. I mean, all you got to do is that, what are you going to call Grams every Sunday? That's, you know.
Actually, yeah, that's about it, right?
No, the only thing on the list of the
in Houston, to do, right?
Check. So getting back to Benjamin Rodin, the details of Rodin's early religious views are sketchy, as those of his secular life. However, he joined the Christian church the same year that he got married. This is what it says here. Although his journey to the church and the extent to which he was involved changes, it's uncertain where his ebbs and flows lay. Blah, 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 blah. In the 1940s, the Rodins were members of the Seventh-day Adventist in Kilgore, Texas. And it's possible that the appeal of a Seventh-day Adventist lay at least in part in the similarities to some aspects of Judaism, such as practicing the Sabbath on the seventh day and abiding by certain dietary laws. And for those of you who watch the show, you know that I am 10% Jewish. That is also,
I thought you were going to say vegan. It's like, what?
That yeah, is know also that not a fact. The Rodins later moved from a church at Kilgore to that at Odessa, where Ben became the head elder. Somewhere around this time, in the early to mid 40s, the couple became influenced by the Shepherd's Rod movement, which was a splinter group of the SDA.
Right.
They eventually settled in Mount Carmel and were the people there were trying to force them out, but they held their ground. They held their ground because they had also financed part of this church. So they felt right. that they had a right and they were entitled to stay there and use the church for their various goings on. There was a standoff apparently between a few people and the church. And the wife, and they occupied it for several days. Eventually, they settled there and started their branch. Now, David, David started as a part of the choir, and soon became more and more convinced that he was supposed to lead the church. And eventually that sort of butted heads with Benjamin and David. And we'll read a little bit into that in a moment, but.
Oh, that's gonna be, it's gonna get juicy.
In 1983, Koresh began claiming the gift of prophecy. And there was a book, did you know there's a book, A Place Called Waco?
Written yes, by David actually, Thibodeau. I haven't read it, I heard about it, yeah.
Interessante. And there was speculation that David had a sexual relationship with Lois Rodin. Is it Rodin or Rodin?
I think it's Rodin. I think
Rodin. Yeah. Let's go with Rodin. And if anyone wants to weigh in on that, just you know, DM me. The widow of Benjamin Rodin and the leader of this now splintered cult, who was then, incidentally, in her late 60s. So we see quite a drastic change, a juxtaposition, if you will, a striking contrast between underage 15-year-olds getting pregnant all the way to the end of the spectrum of, you know, getting it on with granny at 60 years old. Interesting. So,
have you ever seen the movie Kingpin?
Kingpin. Is Woody Harrelson in that?
Yes, that one.
I have not seen that.
Okay, so there's a scene right there where he has to pay rent to this grandma, right? Mm-hmm. And he's basically taking one for the team. That's how he's paying rent. Uh-huh. And every time he's thinking about losing, and I apologize to some of your younger listeners, he will picture grandma doing this. All right? So when I'm hearing about this Lewis lady, and that's all I can picture her in my mind, like, oh my gosh, you know, he took one for the team. You know, this is like Woody Harrelson all over again.
Absolutely. I wonder, I mean, I wonder if she had a good time. I wonder if she thought in her mind she was taking one for the team.
I mean, oh, I don't know, you know, because I think I heard you say several times in your podcast, you know, sex with younger guys or younger people are great, but never leads to anywhere. Well, you know, he was younger. Right?
Well, I'm going to eat my words now. Okay. That may be true for some relationships, not all, but I just think for the majority of relationships that, you know, there's a huge age gap. It generally doesn't work out.
But Koresh took advantage of it. Yeah. And it worked out really well for him.
So Koresh eventually began to claim that God had chosen him to father a child with Lois. Clearly, he had never heard of menopause. Right. Who would be the chosen one? Obviously, you have a baby with Lois. Any child you have with a Lois is going to be...
I'll tell you what, man.
The chosen one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's Family Guy 101, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think he said, and I'm not quote verbatim, he said that he can get her pregnant. He was the chosen one. I'm like, bro, if you can get somebody that will pregnant, go right ahead, man. I mean, I want to see this.
Exactly. Do you think he had like maybe a little Stewie bobblehead riding on the dash of his car?
Just with that's a good one. Yeah, right.
You know, just a little like, met a girl named Mimi, met her own Musky. No. Okay. In 1983, Lois allowed Koresh to begin teaching his own message called the Serpent's Root. Red flag number two. Which caused controversy in the group. Lois's son, George Rodin, intended to be the group's next leader, naturally, and considered Koresh an interloper. An interloper.
Interloper. That sounds interesting. That's
entering the loops. The loops of inter. When Koresh announced that God had instructed him to marry Rachel Jones, not big on Rachel's, no. Who then added Koresh to her name, a period of calm ensued at Mount Carmel Center, but it proved only temporary. Gotta love those calms before the storm.
Of course.
A fire had destroyed $500,000 in administration building and press. Rodin said Koresh had started the fire, but Koresh replied that, in quotes, no man set that fire. Who could it be?
No way.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, that was playing something the main upstairs, you know?
He decided that it was a judgment of God. Bring down a white man, right? Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Rodin claiming to have the support of the majority of the cult. Notice that they now don't call it the church. They call it the cult. Forced Koresh and his group off of the property at gunpoint because everyone in Texas has a gun.
Absolutely.
Koresh around 25 followers set up camp at Palestine, Texas, 90 miles, or for my Canadian followers, 140 kilometers.
Oh, You actually pronounced Palestine correct. Oh. That was a really nice Texan pronunciation. I'm very proud of you.
I have a resource called the Bible. I consult it occasionally. They set up camp 140 kilometers from Waco, where they lived under rough, rough conditions. No takeout, no Uber Eats, no sunken tubs, only showers. Disgusting.
During this Whataburger in sight.
No Whataburger.
No Whataburger. I mean, yeah. And no Buc-ee's. The first Buc-ee's
Can you imagine calling up for that order? Yes, this is David Koresh. We'd like to order 15 of your home-style burgers, please. This is for the newest cult. If you make a left at the donkey and go straight down, you'll see a shed right there.
She's still the Longhorns hanging out there or something.
Don't worry, we are armed, but the guns are not loaded. No. Calm down. You'll stay a while. You'll have fun.
Yeah. Ignore the tanks. They're for later.
Don't forget the ketchup.
We have a really nice fire going. Sorry.
During this time, Koresh undertook recruitment of new followers in California and the United Kingdom because, you know, the British are suckers. No, I'm joking. God. Israel and Australia. Well, Australia, I can see that.
Australia, yeah. They're locked down anyway.
That same year, he traveled to Israel for some, where he claimed to have had visions that he was a modern day Cyrus, not the Billy we are all accustomed to.
Oh, Billy. Oh,
nor
man.
The Miley. Nor the Miley. No. The founder of the Davidian movement, Victor Hautef.
Yeah, I'm a Texan. I have no idea how that, you know, that's just, I'm Texan and Mexican. I can't pronounce that.
Well, he wanted to be God's implement and establish the Davidic kingdom in Palestine. Koresh, who also wanted to be God's tool and set up the Davidic kingdom in Jerusalem. How many artichokes do you think are eaten in Jerusalem on a yearly basis?
Oh my gosh, man, that's a lot saying about us tacos. I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah. Artichoke tacos, possible?
Artichoke tacos. We can work something out.
Artichoke tacos with barbecue sauce.
Barbecue sauce. Wow.
Memories of Jawaco.
I have it ready for the Garth Brooks concert. I'll make sure I have the ready for you.
I love it. At least until 1990, he believed the place of the martyrdom might be in Israel. However, by 1991, he was convinced that this martyrdom, his martyrdom, would be in the U.S. instead of in Israel. He said the prophecies of Daniel would be fulfilled in Waco and that the Mount Carmel Center was the Davidic kingdom. Why Mount Carmel? That's my question. Do you think it was was it petty is my question. Was it just out of pettiness?
You know, two sides to that story. Number one, it's Mount Carmel. There's nothing out there. Number two, it's almost as weird as us Mormons and Independence, Missouri. You ain't damn thing in Missouri, you know. So same thing here, Mount Carmel. They ain't nothing. I mean, other than you know that Magnolia place in Waco. That's about it. But you know what? What's cool about the guy we talk about, Hussef, right?
Or whatever you pronounce that.
Hautef. Yeah, my German friends from Frankfurt going to text me, what the hell are you saying? So his wife had a vision that I thought was very, very cool. Now, I love numbers, right? I love numbers. I can, you know. And she basically said that it was going to be the end of the world or in their world, April 20th of that year, or 19, what I can't remember exactly. And when she said it, it was,
well, she was clearly 30 off. Years.
All right, she was way off. But the standoff ended April 22nd, wrong year, 30 years later. She said it when Koresh was being, a few months before Koresh was born. It's also the same time as, it, you know, Big Jesus lasting on Earth was 30 years. Mm. It's almost, it's very identical. The numbers are just kind of creepy in a way.
Yeah. I personally blame Mercury in retrograde. So
sure. That's yeah. good. Yeah. yeah. I blame In-N-Out Burger in California for everything. So there you go.
After being exiled to the Palestine camp, Koresh and his followers eked out a primitive existence. Eking is yeah, that's you don't want to eke. You want to be careful with your eeks. Yeah. You want to use your eeks very limitedly. Yeah.
Right.
Want to limit your eeks. When Lois died in 1986 from being plowed by a young guy.
Well, hey, that's your one, man. You won the lottery, that one.
The exiled Branch Davidians wondered if they would ever be able to return to Mount Carmel Center. But despite the displacement, Koresh now enjoyed the loyalty of the majority of the Branch Davidian community. So, sorry, George. Rodin,
yeah,
you got shafted.
Yes,
with a big old serpent's root shaft up the patootie.
I mean, you know, yeah, Koresh took one for the team, man. That's all I gotta say. You know, I still picture that.
So, for anyone listening, if you're desiring to start a cult of your own, just fuck someone's mother. There you go.
Exactly.
That's your.
The older, the better.
Close to death. The older, the better.
Yes.
Yeah. In 1987, Rodin exhumed at least one body from the community cemetery. Rodin said he was just moving the cemetery, while Koresh claimed that Rodin had issued a challenge to resurrect the body, and that whoever resurrected the body would be the new leader. Who thinks of these rules? Who comes up with this?
The body's there for days while they're, apparently they're praying or something, or at least Georgie boy is.
Yeah.
It's like, can you imagine the smell?
Mm.
Oh,
well,
man.
They were underground.
Well, even then.
He was trying to resurrect, so trying to dig them up.
Yeah, he's trying. Yeah, even then I was like, man, you got to be.
Yeah.
They must have been hitting some serious meth or something.
Yeah, I can't imagine the smell was pleasant, nor the complexion. I mean, you need sunlight. You need to be out in the sun. You need to be outdoors.
Of course.
But, you can't be in the dark all the time. Just, you need some vitamin D.
You need some vitamin D.
Koresh went to the authorities to file charges against Rodin for illegally exhuming the corpse, but was told that he would have to show proof. You'd think a body would be proof enough, such as a photograph of the corpse. This is what they wanted. Okay. Koresh seized the opportunity to seek criminal prosecution of Rodin by returning to the Mount Carmel Center with 7 armed followers, because everyone in Texas has a gun.
Everybody in Texas has a gun. And it's not going to change,
Allegedly attempting to get photographic proof of the exhumation. Koresh's group was discovered by Rodin, and a gunfight broke out. Hello, Billy the Kid style.
I know, right? It sounded like, wow, look at Koresh. He can actually shoot.
Bananas in pajamas. When the sheriff arrived, Rodin had already suffered a minor gunshot wound and was pinned down behind a tree. I wonder where he was shot. It doesn't say here. It's only a flesh wound. I'll be okay. God told me I'll be fine, and I'll leader of the world.
Increase
the value. Magic bullets. Satan, you cannot stop me. At the trial, Koresh explained that he went to the Mount Carmel Center to uncover evidence of criminal disturbance of a corpse by Rodin. Koresh's followers were acquitted, and in Koresh's case, a mistrial was declared, probably because he's a scary person.
Very nice speaker now, yeah.
Yeah, and a little bit manipulative. I'm sure he
gave a little bit. Nice.
Winky wink to some of the ladies on the old, old jury there. In 1989, Rodin murdered capital killed, mm-hmm. Wayman Dale, worst name ever, Adair, with an axe blow to the skull.
Huh. I have to use the guns.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, apparently everyone in Texas has an axe too.
Apparently now too, yeah, absolutely.
This was after Adair stated that he believed that he himself was the true Messiah. So pro tip, if you are the Messiah or you feel like you are one, keep it to yourself.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, just pro tip for if you're in a cult.
I've never said that, you know, yeah. Yeah,
you've signed up for one. Just if you feel the Messiah within you, just, you know, keep it on the down low. Keep it on the DL.
Keep it on the down low, especially around George.
Especially around someone named George. Yeah, for sure. He was judged insane. Rodin claimed that the man was sent by Koresh to kill him. He was judged insane and confined to a psychiatric hospital at Big Spring, Texas. Now, I'm just putting this out there, but if you're in a psychiatric hospital, I would think Big Spring would not be the most ideal.
Dana, damn, you know, to quote a TikTok, there ain't a damn thing to do in Big Spring, Texas. There ain't nothing out there.
The name alone. Let's make a run for it. Big Spring. You know, like,
it's going to be dust everywhere. That's about it.
Since Rodin owed thousands of dollars in unpaid taxes on Mount Carmel Center, Koresh and his followers were able to raise the money and reclaim the property. Unlike, you know, the property values of today.
Of course.
Don't have money for shit. Yeah. Rodin continued to harass the Koresh faction by filing legal papers while in prison. Sneaky, sneaky Pete. When Koresh and his followers reclaimed the Mount Carmel Center, they discovered that tenants who had rented from Rodin had left behind a meth lab.
Yes. Because, you know, what else are you going to do in Waco, Texas?
There is nothing like the smell of meth in the morning, let me tell you.
Absolutely.
Meth is good anytime. Meth is good in the morning. Meth is good in the afternoon. Meth is good as a late night snack, to be quite honest.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's Waco, Texas. I mean,
you have shit.
Smells better than the Brazos River.
Yeah, you get on that. You get on that meth.
Yeah.
Uh-huh, actually. You know, you got to heat stuff up, keeps you warm, you know? Okay. I mean, it's a win-win, right? Koresh reported this to the local police department and asked to have it removed. So clearly he didn't see the earning potential in that.
Of course.
Yeah. Now, as time went on, there was some allegations of child abuse and statutory rape. Trigger warning, enter now. Koresh was alleged to have been involved in multiple incidents of physical and sexual abuse of children. Worst human on the planet. His doctrine of the House of David did lead to marriages with both married and single women in the Branch Davidians. And my thing is like, isn't one headache enough? Like, you want multiple wives? Like, you got it. Like, I mean,
you can't put up with one woman, much less man.
This doctrine was based on a purported revelation that involved the production of 24 children by chosen women in the community. These 24 children were to serve as the 24 ruling elders over the millennium after the return of Christ. Holy Christ! These women purportedly chosen through this doctrine included at least one underage girl, Michelle Jones, who was the younger sister of Koresh's legal wife, Rachel, I knew I couldn't trust her, Rachel, and the daughter of a lifelong Branch Davidians, Perry and Mary Bell Jones. A six-month investigation of sexual abuse allegations by the Texas Child Protection Services in 1992 failed to turn up any evidence. That does not mean it did not happen or occur.
Absolutely, right.
That does not constitute the absence of a crime.
And as much as I love our government, of course, CPS is one of the, it's probably one of my least favorite of the agencies. So
terrible, horrible.
Yeah. They're like, oh, joy, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. let me see here. Where was I? The Branch now, Davidians. Sorry. Yes, you're saying something.
I was going to say with the physical abuse of kids. I know there was one part where they were saying that they were being spanked. Right. Back then, it was okay to spank.
Yeah. Did you get spanked as a kid? I got spanked as a kid. Oh,
dude. Yeah. That chunk I used to fly all the time, my mom. Yeah. It's funny because she told me later on years, I never hit you, like, huh? Anyway.
Yeah, funny how parents don't remember those.
Yeah, they forget that stuff, right?
Abuse.
Yeah. I never did that. She's like, whatever.
Yeah.
But the parents have to be in a good mood. They cannot be mad when they're spanked, or else they will get spanked themselves.
Right.
Yeah. Now, I would volunteer. Anyway, sorry. We went different route. Yeah.
In one widely reported incident, an ex-member claimed that Koresh became irritated with the cries of his son Cyrus and spanked the child so severely for several minutes on three consecutive visits to the child's bedroom. In a second report, a man involved in a custody battle visited the Mount Carmel Center and claimed to have seen the beating of a young boy with a stick. Finally, the FBI justification for forcing an end to the 51-day standoff was predicated on the charge that Koresh was abusing children inside Mount Carmel Center. Allegations
had no jurisdiction over. But okay,
the FBI had no jurisdiction over them.
They're
onto themselves, right?
They imagine that federal government,
which is so
They took a lot of liberties in that case that were kind of very strange.
But. Yeah. Allegations had been made that he had fathered children with underage girls in the Branch Davidians. In hours that followed the deadly conflagration, Attorney General Janet Reno told reporters, "We had specific information that babies were being beaten." However, the FBI Director William Sessions publicly denied the charge and told reporters that they had no such information about child abuse inside Mount Carmel Center. A careful examination of the other child abuse charges found the evidence to be weak and ambiguous. Weak and ambiguous does not mean none. Casting doubt on the allegations. The allegations of child abuse largely stem from ex-members. That's...
Including one that was trying to take power, if I remember correctly from what I was reading. Uh-huh. And also, I mean, a father that's trying to fight for custody will say whatever the heck it is.
Interessante. Mm-hmm. Well, we now move on to... what we saw most in the media, right, which was the raid and the siege by the federal authorities. Now, before we head into this, do you think that there was ever a moment I want to say that when people branch off and start their own groups and cults, I think a small part of them believe that they're doing something good and useful. Do you ever think that there was a period of time, no matter how small, that within that community that David Koresh ran as the cult, there was ever a time where things were happy, cohesive?
I think so. I think in their world it was, because they, you know, even when they were trying to get hostages out, nobody wanted to leave because that was their world, right?
They're brainwashed.
Brainwashed, yeah. I mean, to them, that's, you know, we call them cults. To them, that's their world, right?
Yeah.
To them, they see that as that's the world. Same thing happened with the Jeffs clan at San Angelo. They were protecting him because that was their happiness. They saw the outside world as the hell. So, you know, Koresh is the Messiah, right, in their eyes. He's riding the seven seals and all that good stuff. So he's brainwashed his kids and all that. Of course, they were in unison. I mean, I can't even venture to say that most of the people that died in Jonestown probably were the same happy-go-lucky people too.
Mm. Can you imagine those movie nights at Waco, Texas, at Mount Carmel? I mean, would you have caramel corn? I mean, it seems natural. Seems fitting.
It's fitting, right? Seems Waco, fitting. Texas.
There was a big debate recently on Would I Make a Podcast between there was some chips and some baked goods involved, but ketchup chips and dill pickle chips were a winner.
So I was going to ask you about that. I saw that the other day. It's like ketchup chips. Yeah. What in the hell, Canada?
I'm sorry. What? Sidebar. hello. may I approach the bench?
Okay.
you've never had ketchup chips?
I never had ketchup chips.
I am shocked. I never had, and appalled. Okay.
Not a Texas thing. We would not be like, huh? Yeah. When I saw that, I can't remember. I saw on TV or something. I'm like, ketchup chips? What in the hell? Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So I'm going to send you some ketchup chips. They'll probably all be broken by the time they get there, but you'll get the idea. Wow. Have you had dill pickle chips?
Yes. Now those, Yeah, Lay's does make those here, but they don't make the ketchup chips here.
Oh, you have Lay's in the States? What other brands do you have? Do you have Old Dutch in the States?
No. Actually, Lay's is from Dallas, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, well, isn't everything from Dallas? Excuse me.
Everything's bigger in Dallas.
Well, there we go. Texas. You have the Colts and you have the chips. What else do you want?
Right, so goes.
Do you have Miss Vicky's chips? Please say yes.
I'll have to research that. Ooh, I'll check.
If you do, spicy dill pickle. Miss Vicky's spicy dill pickle chips.
So, I'll look for those for sure.
Yeah. Enjoyable.
Okay. I'll have to call HEB, make sure they carry that stuff. Oh, I'll check.
Okay. I can't believe you haven't had ketchup chips. Okay, we got to get on.
I've never heard that before, actually. I saw it just a few weeks ago.
Mismanaging your life. Okay. Back to the raid and siege of Waco, Texas. The Waco siege began on February 28th, 1993, when the ATF raided Mount Carmel Center. The ensuing gun battle resulted in the deaths of 4 ATF agents and 6 Branch Davidians. Shortly thereafter the initial raid, the FBI hostage rescue team took command of the federal operation because the FBI has jurisdiction over incidents involving the deaths of federal agents. The negotiating team, I was going to say
that's one of the reasons for Uvalde, they got involved because federal agents got involved. So
exactly.
Yeah.
The negotiating team established contact with Koresh inside the compound. I may be wrong. I remember seeing on TV, correct me if I'm wrong. I may be making this up in my head because I'm prone to a little exaggeration. But do I remember seeing something where they threw in a phone, and like there was a long line and they threw in a phone into the center and they talked to Koresh on the phone? Or was that in a movie that I'm remembering?
I want to say they did have to roll one in, I think. I don't know if Mount Carmel didn't have one because they have utilities in some places.
Or was he locked down in the basement? Did he confine himself down in the basement somewhere?
He did confine himself to his room, yeah, or something like that. And nobody kept low because anybody stood up, the snappers were getting them from what I was reading about. So,
okay. Anyways, I'm unclear on that fact. Communication over the next 51 days included telephone exchanges with various FBI negotiators. Koresh himself had been seriously injured by a gunshot. This was more than a flesh wound this time.
Yes. Right in the hip.
Right
in the hip.
And he calls it his lowest hip.
I mean, she's not around anymore, you know.
It's my hip in memory of Lois. I cannot walk on my left side. As the standoff continued, he and his closest male associates negotiated delays so that he could possibly write religious documents, which he said he needed to complete before his surrender. Koresh's conversations with the negotiators were dense, and they also included biblical imagery. There was a lot of crayons used at this time.
Sounds like it, yeah.
Some hooked on phonics. The FBI negotiators treated the situation as a hostage crisis. The siege of Mount Carmel Center ended on April 19th, 1993, when the U.S. Attorney General Janet Reno approved recommendations of the FBI officials to proceed with a final advance in which the Branch Davidians would be removed from the Mount Carmel Center by force. And that's when the cannibalism started.
Yes.
No. Oh, but that was a good tagline if you watch Last Podcast on Left. Where was I? I just lost my place. That sucks. In an attempt to flush Koresh out of the stronghold, the FBI resorted to pumping CS gas into the compound with the aid of an M728 combat engineering vehicle. I don't know if those come with instructions, but if they were made by IKEA, you can be rest assured that there is going to be extra parts at the end of it.
Because nobody reads instructions.
Yeah. Good news is you can call the Rapid Bunny team and they'll come over and set it up for you. So, yeah.
Keep that in mind. Yeah.
This was equipped with a battering ram because those are useful.
That's what got him in trouble the first time.
Memories of Lois.
Yeah, exactly. I'm pretty sure he was going like, I gotta call her.
I should call her.
Yeah.
In the course
of, like a steal the other day.
In the course of the advance, the Mount Carmel Center caught fire under circumstances that remain disputed. I'm gonna say it was due to fire.
You know what? That's a really good point. You know, some sort of spark.
I'm going to say there were flames involved. Yeah. Barricaded inside the building, 79 Branch Davidians perished in the ensuing blaze. 21 of these victims were children. So sad. Very sad. Under the age of 18. Bless their souls. Koresh, then 33, died of a gunshot wound to the head.
They can't figure out if he did it himself or somebody got.
Right, a little nip to the noggin. Yeah. During the course of the fire, it is unknown whether he committed suicide or if he was killed. According to the FBI, Steve Schneider,
Koresh's weird names again.
Schneider, Koresh's right-hand man, who, in quotes, probably realized that he was dealing with a fraud, shot and killed Koresh and then committed suicide with the same gun. This is the theory of the FBI. The medical examiner reported 20 people, including 5 children under the age of 14, had been shot. Don't shoot your kids. Don't shoot little people. Don't shoot anything under 4 feet.
Oh man, now I'm gonna throw a curveball at you.
Yeah.
Barbecue or shot?
Whew. I'm gonna go shots. I can't do the barbecue.
Right. I mean, that'd be my question of the day. If I got to a point where it's like barbecue or shot.
Yeah. I don't. That's not a pain. I don't want to burn. Yeah. I don't want to burn. I don't want to drown.
No.
I mean, I don't want a knife scenario. If you know, if it's my time, it's my time. Just clip it.
Get over,
you know? Let's go. Let's get her done. And a 3-year-old had been stabbed in the chest. This is what was reported. Now we come to the aftermath. After all said and done, Koresh now lies in Memorial Park Cemetery in Tyler, Texas, in none other than the Last Supper section. Talk about VIP treatment.
VIP treatment, that's right. Still a celebrity.
Several of his albums were released, including Voice of Fire in 1994. He was a bit of a, you know, a bit of a an artiste, if you will, with the guitar. In 2004, Koresh's 1968 Chevrolet Camaro. What's a guy with no friends doing with a Camaro? Well, yeah, maybe that makes sense. How are you going to pick up 60-year-olds driving us?
I was going to say, how are you going to pick up the teen in a high school crowd?
You ain't getting no dates in a Winnebago, right?
No, Winnebago.
Which had been damaged during the raid, and it sold for $37,000 at auction. What in the actual fudgerama? Who would buy that? Who would want to buy that? It's now owned by Ghost Adventures.
Of course, Zach Baggins.
Okay. I'm gonna leave that one there. Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols cited the Waco siege as their motivation. They're talking about two other nutsos for the Oklahoma City bombing of April 19th, 1995, which was timed to coincide with the second anniversary of the Waco assault. I mean, if there's an anniversary to remember,
it's Waco.
You know, it's that one. You get the flowers, you know, you get the card, you get the guns, and you celebrate, right?
You get the trifecta. You get Oklahoma City, Waco, and I believe Columbine's around there too.
That's right. Four documentary films have been made about the siege, including different versions of Waco. Waco, The Rules of Engagement, Waco, A New Revelation.
Really good book. Really good one.
Is it? Yeah. Waco, The Big Lie, and Waco, Madman or Messiah. That one would interest me. In 2018, BBC Radio 5 Live created a radio podcast titled End of Days, which was about the death and life of Koresh, his involvement with the Waco siege, and the recruitment of people who lived in Nottingham, Manchester, and London into the Branch Davidians. I wonder what the ratio was of like Brits to Texans.
Good question. I don't know. You know, what I thought was funny now is as you hear this, man, you almost makes me think of the Brigham Young story, you know, because at one point he was out there in Britain trying to bring people back, or maybe it was Joseph Smith. One of the two was out there in Britain trying to bring people back. It's like, so Brits love American religion, I guess, you know?
Yeah. Interessante.
Yeah.
A Mexican movie was made entitled Chahida e Hueco.
God, that was one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life.
How was the pronunciation?
Horrible. I mean, I tell you what, for Canadians, it's pretty good. Yeah. You're ready for Texas, you know?
Or here's another one. Tragedia sucedió en Monte Carmelo, Waco, Texas.
You recover really well. We started off at first. You know, we recover, you know.
Incidentally, Taylor Kitsch played Koresh in the 2018 miniseries Waco, who incidentally now has no career. And that's where we come to the end of our first murderous episode, a discount version of Last Podcast on the Left, Waco, Texas, David Koresh.
So here are my questions, right? Because, you know, not that I'm a conspiracy theorist, but I love devil's advocate.
Okay.
So who is the real serial killer here? Was it David Koresh or the ATF?
Of himself? Who died? Like of who killed David Koresh?
No. Who's actually, because you know, when you and I were discussing this, we were talking about serial killers and evil people.
Yeah.
So is it the ATF, the evil people, or was it David Koresh? Because if you just look at it, he was just a religious wacko, right? In Waco.
Yeah, so you mean it was the original hub of the church of the original sect that he joined.
So who's the evil here? The government or Koresh?
The government. What's your take on the government piece? How would the I don't think the government the government didn't recruit these people and force them.
No, because I mean, so to me, what did Koresh do wrong? Right, so he had a sect or a cult or whatever you want to call it, and back then he used the word cult. It was the end of the world.
What did Koresh do wrong? Let me count the ways. Number one, illegal relationship, I mean, underage,
legally
in today's, you know, vernacular, we call rape. recruiting right, people absolutely. Under misguided means for the purpose of control and manipulation.
Every religion does that. Hey, look at the,
had a cult.
First time you recorded.
Bro had a cult.
Going back to the first time you and I talked to one of these, there's this guy down there at the old summit that I think manipulates people. But that's just my own personal opinion.
What's summit? What summit?
Oh, I'm sorry. You call it Compact Center, I think. Lakewood Church.
Alrighty. So, and thanks for joining me on the show.
Right?
Oh my God, we've run out of time. Look at that. This has been swell. we'll have a replacement for next episode.
And that's what I'm saying, you know, right?
Yeah.
So ATF, you know, so from just reading and because back then when I was watching, I was in college and, you know, it was just like, you know, I remember first part of the class was, I can't believe the ATF didn't notify the Texas Rangers or Governor Richards that this is going on. Local, you know, they were everywhere upset about it. The other thing I when you mentioned Waco, I was like, well, I got more research because all I remember is basically what, you know, the news was feeding us. Mm-hmm. As you read into it, it's like, okay, so ATF had no jurisdiction over the sexual assault case or whatever you want to call it.
Which blows my mind. Crazy.
That's like, you know, DPS cleared them and all that. So, and ATF was in there for guns, but they never wanted to search them because apparently, from what I read, their request is, hey, come on in, you know, I'll show you what we got because we sell them. They just come from Ruby Ridge, which was a disaster for them because, you know, one of the snipers took out the wife, I believe, of the sect leader over there. So when ATF decided to do this raid, I could see them, you know, wearing, you know, the old Andy Kaufman skit where he does the, you know, hey, I have to save the day, you know. I can see an ATF officer doing that, you know.
Yeah.
trying to, you know, so they go out there, they insert the warrant correctly, right? Because they just went out there with their horse roses. They called the news because they wanted to record everything, right? They want to make sure a big promotion of it because they wanted good publicity because their asses were in a bad mood after, or the country was not very happy with them after Ruby Ridge. And then from what reading, and of course, you know, you can't believe anything in the internet, even though the internet doesn't lie, right?
Right. Everything on the internet is true. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, the reports that from his attorney, David DeGuerin, which at the time was the number one attorney in the state of Texas for criminal law, saying that about the door being shot first by the ATF, were the ones who shot first.
Yeah.
And then the one that turns my stomach more was the tank over the entrance to the school bus where the kids were.
Mm.
That really bothers me because I was like, okay, so, and once again, that from reading conspiracy theories, because I was trying to get all angles on it.
Yeah.
My understanding that the fire started because the same sniper that the Ruby Ridge was basically shooting, because they found sniper bullets at some of the people that were inside of during the fire. So maybe that caused the spot. So that's why I said, who was actually the serial killer here? Was it Koresh? Or the ATF?
Well, when you're talking serial killer,
mass murder, you know better.
Well, I think to a degree you'd have to exclude the government in that respect. And now I can't speak for American politics or American government or American law, but it's clear that the people involved. Who were supposed to investigate this? They were severely flawed. They made a lot of mistakes.
Absolutely,
it was horrible. You know, there's no question. There's no question.
Yeah.
But to put them in a category of mass murderer or serial killer, I think is a little bit
okay. So how about reaching. This?
I mean, they definitely made mistakes. But I think this is true for a lot of of tragedies, a lot of murders, a lot of cold cases, a lot of, I think when we look back on, you know, things that have happened, we always look back with a different mindset and a different hindsight. Yes. And we say, well, this should have been done or this could have been done. But A, we don't know the circumstances at the time involved because right. we don't have those facts. We're not a fly on the wall. We just are not involved in those cases. Right. The average person in public isn't a part of that. So one, we really don't know. And two, there's always things that could have been done better or more in depth or differently, absolutely. You know, in every situation. And number three, there is unfortunately a lot of, not in every case, in every department, I'm not saying everyone, but unfortunately there is a lot of the times a lot of unforced errors, I call them.
Right. Absolutely.
A lot of things.
And to clarify thing, I mean, I am a strong supporter of law enforcement. So it's not like let's attack, you know, screw law enforcement. I had nothing to do with it. To me, it's like, you know, because I was having this conversation before I talked to you with my buddy.
Yeah.
And he says, well, no, it's Janet Reno's fault. I said, well, no, Janet Reno just heard what the officer in charge told him. You know, I mean, very similar to what happened in Uvalde. The officer in charge was feeding the information, right?
Right.
And I don't want to get into that one because that's another rule. Yeah.
Yeah.
But same thing here. It's like, you know, Janet Reno was told information, you know, and President Clinton made the call following the instructions of what he believed was the right call, which, you know, so that's why I was wondering. It's like, okay, so who is the bad guy in this situation here?
Yeah. You know, and I think
that was what I was wondering.
Yeah. And I think it's very easy to, and not that I am giving them, you know, an up for the work that they did.
Right.
There was some very serious mistakes and it was, their carrying out of investigations was massively flawed. But I think it's really easy to, it's very easy to defend someone, but it's very easy to also rip someone apart. It's very easy, especially in a court setting, especially with a lack of evidence, with or without evidence, it's very easy to rip an organization, a person, an entity, it's very easy to rip it apart and
of course
show all the quote unquote mistakes that people have made.
Right. Monday morning quarterback, right?
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But
And I always said there's three sides to every story, right? Your version, my version, and what was actually the truth.
That's right.
I think in Waco, I don't know if we're ever going to actually get the truth because as the legend grows, you know, the conspiracy theories, you know, are getting wilder and wilder every time, right?
Yeah.
So the things that came out of there, of course, you know, was Oklahoma City. Alex Jones became super big after that. And DeGaren became this awesome attorney here in the Houston area. So,
yeah. And I also don't think, you know, I think the tactics and negotiations and thought processes and policies and procedures were probably... and I'm not speaking for them, but the people involved probably felt that they were, you know, carrying things out to the letter at that particular time. You know, as time goes, we make improvements, we learn from the things that we do, you know, and I think if something like that were to happen today, and God forbid it does, and let's hope that it doesn't. But if it were, I think it probably would be handled very differently.
Yeah, of course. Because if I'm an officer, if I put myself in the officer's shoes, like 51 day standoff, 51.
it's a bit much. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like I'm away from my family because you know a lot of guys came from out of town. You know, the nearest office wake was in Dallas, if I remember correctly. Yeah. And so it's like, man, you know, away from your family for 51 days because this crazy nut in there won't come out because he wants to write a book. You know, if you looked at it that way, it's like,
it's important to note too that each country has a different way of negotiating and of handling things. I know that the UK is very much a preventative service, and I believe in some areas their officers don't even carry guns. They have their the bully sticks, they don't call them that, what do they call them, batons. They have their batons. I think at best they may be equipped with tasers. But they are trained in negotiating with, you know, whoever they're dealing with and creating a safe space and a perimeter, and gathering, you know, multiple officers to create a safe environment for both the victim and the assailant. Right. And so they're trained differently. And I think that's very much different from the way officers are trained here in Canada, and very, very much different from the way they are trained in the US.
And different in Texas.
And I believe, absolutely. And I believe, again, I can't speak to the fact, but I believe it's a shoot to kill. It's not a shoot to disarm. I believe it's a shoot to kill.
Right. Yeah. I think in Texas called shoot to incapacitate, which basically right there.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, every country is different, and so the outcome is different. And I think the outcome will and may be different, you know, as time goes. Right. But tragic nonetheless.
Oh, absolutely. Those poor kids, right? And then they kids passed away. And a lot of people that shouldn't have had to pass away passed away.
Very sad when children are involved. But I think the main takeaway from this is, if you're gonna start a cult, definitely bang someone's mom.
Somebody's bang and don't sell guns.
Yeah. And if you have, you know, an aspiration of being Messiah, you know, keep it on the DL. Just
keep it in DL.
Because people start talking and it's just, you know, it becomes, it's gossip. And then you know, it's just.
Yeah. And you go bang somebody's mom, make sure she's about 70. So, you know, at least you won't have to do this for so long.
The closer to death, the better for you.
And not Waco.
Yeah. Choose a valid point. Choose a different area. We've done Waco.
Somewhere nicer, Kerrville, something. Somewhere, I don't know.
Maybe somewhere with a couple of palm trees. Do you know what I'm saying? Like close to the beach.
Yeah, damn thing out there in Waco.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at least, you know, have some Wi-Fi available, data. get some data. We're all
in Electroville, right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
How are we gonna watch Netflix? You know? How are we gonna watch Netflix? You know, my daughter will go crazy without
that. Your daughter is so funny. The video she did was hilarious. I must have watched that 10 times. So funny.
It was funny. It was all her idea. She actually wanted to do her mom. And like, baby, we cannot. Much as I really want to do that, I can't do that to her, to your mom.
Yeah. Just, you know, So in the video,
I remember even talking to you about it.
Like, yeah. She slaps you in the face with like whipped cream or something like that.
Shaving cream. Yeah.
Shaving cream.
It was funny because, you know, that night we were trying to put Oliver to sleep. You know, Oliver's just, it's autistic, so he doesn't really understand what was going on.
Yeah.
And he actually, it worked out even better because his smile afterwards, it was hilarious, you know. And it got better because I got hit in the face. Every time he would just say, blue, and pow. That was hilarious.
Now, next episode, you will be going and you will be choosing an unsavory person to talk about. And it may change, but do you want us to give it a little insight, a little taste test, tidbit about who it might be?
I changed it in my head about 100 different times already.
Yeah.
Give the top
two or three. Who we thinking? And it might change. It might change, but
it might change.
Few,
yeah,
these are
top three.
Few on the list.
Bundy's always been one of my favorite people, and I had to write a paper in college about Bundy. So
yeah,
Bundy's always interesting. Yeah, but originally I was going to do some guy in Dallas. I think I'm in Texas. He's like, oh, this guy, and then he's like, wow, this guy's boring.
Yeah,
nothing fun about this guy. Like, you're like, oh my gosh.
I hate those boring serial killers. They're the worst kind of serial killers out there. Yeah.
The question I have about serial killers is this. Why is it that male serial killers are usually good-looking guys? Usually, not all of them.
Well, have you seen John Wayne Gacy?
Yeah, I've seen Gacy, but, you know, Bundy. All right.
Yeah.
And every female serial killer is butt ugly. How is that?
Really? That's I'm going to find an attractive female serial killer now. I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I just think like at least a 6 or 7 or something. You know, that's gonna be a perfect 10.
There's gotta be like a, you know, a Black Widow out there, or a Navy Dahlia.
Yeah, we might have to find one, because, like I said, you know, I haven't been able to find one. It's like, dude, you're a good-looking one. You know, at least the guy dies with a big smile on his face or something, you know?
All right. So we will wait till next episode to see who you choose. Very excited to do this. This was kind of fun. A little bit different.
It was fun, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit different from our regular episodes. Yeah. Again, trigger warnings for this show. If it's not your thing, don't at me. Just don't watch it.
Yes.
Just don't listen. If you have any suggestions or takeaways from the show or critiques, I love the feedback as always. Tell people where they can find you, Hector. On your socials?
Sorry, my mind just went blank.
Not your Hector's address. Mess, definitely not. Not after this episode.
On Instagram. Yeah. Hector's Mess Instagram. Matter of fact, if you got somebody you guys want to talk about, hey, put it on there. I would love to.
There you go.
I got a lot of times in my hands. Yeah.
DM Hector with your suggestions.
DM me. Yeah. I'm not as cool as Daniel, you know, with his DMs, but, you know, hey, just DM me with this stuff.
Danny. DMs are open.
DMs are open. You're like, hey, man. My DMs are open.
Excellent. And you also have a catering IG too, which is fabulous. Beautiful Mess.
Beautiful Mess Chef. Yes.
On Instagram. Excellent.
Yeah, anytime. Just send me a DM of either one, and we'll get another serial killer in here.
Sounds good. Well, this has been fun, my friend. I'm looking forward to our follow-up episode. Thank you, everyone, for listening and watching. Don't forget to follow, like, share, and subscribe, and we will see you next Monday. Bye, everybody.
Bye.